Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings. Welcome to another segment of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and we are bringing you another special segment tonight of New Day Resurrection. And we're doing that because, as we indicated previously, we are, in fact, focusing on Black August. And, this is like a very, very important time right now. And so what we want to do is make sure that we are in the right flow of things as we begin to proceed with some of the things that need to happen for Black August, as well as for things that are also coming up in the very near future. What we're going to do very shortly is we're going to go to our live line, and we're going to bring to you a continuation of a dialogue that we started, I guess, maybe 2 weeks ago. We were able to dialogue with Brother Bilal Sunni Ali, and for those who are not familiar with our brother, well, it certainly is time that you do become familiar with him. What we're going to do is, I'm checking the boards right now. Looks like everything is ready. Okay. Before we go to our live dialogue for tonight, we want to kind of give you a recap of what happened here in Philly for the Black August event that took place this past Sunday at the Shanghai City Cultural Center here in Philadelphia. We were able to present a screen showing of the FBI war against Tupac. And let's see. While we're doing that, we're focusing on making sure that our boards are okay. So just kind of bear with us for a moment because, you know, this technology do sometimes. But anyway, yeah, it looks like we're pretty good. Okay. Now, getting back to the recap. From Sunday, we were at the Shanghai City Learning Center, or Cultural Center, rather. And at that point, we were able to present the film and also have a dialogue about the film. And, of course, it focused on a lot of information that was relevant to the government's terrorism program known as COINTELPRO. And, of course, some things are also going on today. That is also really the extension of the COINTELPRO program. Maybe called some different things, but nevertheless, its mission and direction is still the same, and that is making certain that those who are striving for self-determination and liberation from an African Black frame reference, they want to make sure that that does not happen in this day and age, just as they attempt to, see that it didn't happen during the 50s, 60s, and 70s, where it was really, really very visible. It's still very visible today, but in some different kinds of ways, and we're going to talk more about that as we proceed with the dialogue tonight as well. Okay. Let me just backtrack for one moment. I want to remind you also that later on this week, we may do another special segment, and this time it will be with Chairman Fred Hampton. We attempted to bring him in on Saturday for a dialogue after the film presentation, but unfortunately we were not able to connect with the technology that we were using at the time. And we wanted to connect with Chairman Fred because yesterday was, in fact, the Earth Day observance of his father's Earth, and yesterday they did have some activities in the Chicago area, and I believe they did in fact go into the implementation of naming the street after Chairman Fred, Deputy Chairman Fred. Okay, so later on in this week we're going to really try to connect or reconnect with Fred Hampton Jr. In order to get that report, and if we cannot reach him during the course of this week, because we know a lot of things are going on, what we think we'll be able to do is to definitely have him on the show for our regular programming, which is on Saturday, okay, from 10:30 to 12 midnight. That is our regular programming. All right, very shortly again, we are going to talk live with Brother Bilal Sunni Ali, who is not only a musician, artist, but certainly a brilliant, brilliant brother, a brother who has been involved in the African liberation struggle for many years now, who is also a former political prisoner, but is also now presently one of the spokespersons for both the Freedom Campaign for Iman Jamil Al-Amin, as well as for Dr. Matul Shakur. Now, for those of you who tuned into our last broadcast, well, you heard an interview that we did with one of Dr. Matul Shakur's students, okay? And, of course, very soon we are going to be bringing Brother Dr. Kokai Patterson to Philly, and then we will be bringing him to other locations throughout the U.S. to begin training for the acupuncture program and holistic health healing program under the MWM movement umbrella, which is a part of our African Holistic Health and Healing Society. So we're going to be giving you more information about that as we proceed as well. In the meantime, what we're going to do is get ready to introduce or bring to you again our brother, Bilal Sunni Ali. But before we do, I'm going to just share some of the sounds that he is so well known for, you know. And needless to say, as our brother talks often about healing, well, if music can in fact heal, then we can assure you that the music and the sounds of Bilal Sunni Ali does that and then some. So, we introduce you to Brother Bilal Sunni Ali.
Come on.
Brother Heru with his spoken word to bring us on to Brother Bilal Sunni Ali.
Thank you.
what we call some of the healing vibrations. How about Brother Bilal Sunni Ali? What we're going to get ready to do now is go to our live line. And as I mentioned earlier, we're going to have a live dialogue. This is the last day of what we call Black August, but of course, we know a lucha continua. The struggle does indeed continue, and the struggle for freedom, liberation for our people, and of course, the freedom of our political prisoners is an absolute must. So that's what we're going to talk about tonight, Sam. We're going to talk about Black August. We're going to talk about the continual campaigns to free our political prisoners. We're going to talk about self-determination and some things that's going on in Belize. And, of course, we're going to talk about those things that are inspirational and motivational to you. We're going to open the live line up a little later on if you have some comments or questions or whatever. We might open up the chat room and we'll see how things go. But certainly you can tune in and make your presence or voice heard by calling 646-652-2232. 646-652-2232. We will open those lines up a little later on. But right now, we're going to go to our live line and joining us, and we are always, you know, just wonderfully happy when our brother is able to, you know, be a part of our radio program because, you know, certainly he is a part of our extended family. And it is always, you know, an honor to have him joining us. So without further ado, because we have a lot we want to try to cover tonight in really a short period of time, we are going to welcome our brother again, Bilal Sunni Ali. So let's go to the board.
Yes. Good evening, and I'm very glad, to be here and tune with your audience.
Yes. So welcome back again on our radio program of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. And, you know, that's what we're talking about, you know, being resurrected and definitely being liberated.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't recall exactly, my brother, where we left off at when we last had our dialogue, but I know we wanted to go into some things that are presently happening. But before we do that, I just want to convey to you, and I think I might mention earlier, we were able to show the film presentation on Sunday of the FBI war against Tupac. And I can tell you, the folks that came, they were like, they were on fire. They looked at that film, and they really, really had an appreciation for it. In fact, the brother who owns the facility, Shanghai City Cultural Center, he was so impressed with the information that he requested that that the MWM organization does a monthly film showing.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah,
that's wonderful.
Yeah, so he said specifically like that kind of information. So with
that topic is such a that's such a hot topic that more and more people are tuning into, I'm glad to see. Because it was for a while there, people just chalked it up as a East Coast, West Coast rivalry amongst rappers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that was that's a facade. You know, the idea that there's a continuing war of between East Coast rappers and West Coast rappers, it's not a reality. I mean, within the music industry, it's not a reality. Although there have been some incidents, it's not a reality if they're lined up on two sides. And if you're from the West Coast, you're not welcome on the
mm-hmm.
East Coast. Or if you're from the East Coast, you're not welcome on the West Coast. I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people in the industry have jobs that take them all over the world, and they're welcome wherever they're booked. They're welcome.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
So when they create this false idea of a war, you know, then it's easy to make people accept that two people killed were victims
mm-hmm.
of a war, of an internal war, and not victims of You're not victims of the United States National Security Force. And that's, so I've been very happy to see everywhere I go. I mean, I don't even have to bring up the topic of Tupac's assassination.
Right.
People bring it to me and ask me what do I think about it. But when they bring it to me, it's like they've already formed their opinions, and their opinions are usually, obviously not even more than usually, their opinions are always right on the money in terms of understanding that there's a covert war going on against our nation, against all of our people. And those who are on the front line feel the brunt of that war.
Well, and it's so very obvious that there's the continuation of that and then some, you know, as we look around us and see some of the things that are going on all over the country, you know, it seems like it's just become a bit more sophisticated.
Yeah, well, I don't even think it doesn't seem to me to be any more sophisticated than it was 40 years ago. To me, it seems to be less sophisticated and more blatant. And what happens is that people are at the point where the fear is set in, where people don't budge. But people know what's happening. They just don't know how we're going to get out of it. People will identify. Our people always identify with a victory, and they'll identify immediately with the opportunity to rebel. And you know, you just give them a chance, like, you know, say the lights go out, or you know, or there's a storm, anything that'll hamper the society and allow people to acquire the things that they need that they readily cannot afford. They will take any opportunity to go and retrieve those things, and you know, whenever that opportunity presents itself.
And you know, my brother, I totally agree, especially with that it being, you know, really blatant. And I think what I was also thinking about as we were talking about it is, when I said the sophistication of things, is that now, you know, how they're even utilizing the manipulation of the food and other biological kind of chemistry things that, you know, they're putting into our communities. You know, we now have all these cameras and stuff right within our community, right on the corners. And, you know, so I'm just saying it's like some other things that's now being added on, and folks aren't really digging it. They're not really paying attention. For example, I looked at, as I was riding through the city today, I saw this sign say, get your flu shot. $24.99, Rite Aid, right? Now, you got Rite Aids all over, probably all over the country, but definitely all over Philly. So I'm looking at that going, wow, these people are telling you, come get your flu shots, come pay for us to kill you.
And they're going to charge you for it.
They're going to charge you for it, $24.99.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, well, that is... In a sense, that is somewhat a sophisticated way of pushing fascism on us, fascism on us through fear, and then actually charging us for it. And it's pretty rampant, not only in the medical field but in the security field. You know, they make encourage you to buy burglar bars that will not even allow you to get out of your house in an emergency. And they'll make you pay for it. You have to pay for it. I think one of the things that we have to be proactive on the issue of this war, and realize that we have a duty to bring about the release of those people who are locked up in jails, the political prisoners, the prisoners of war. Especially in talking about the freedom fighters, because we don't know many, many people and many organizations have definitions of prison of war that include our entire population because of the historical fact that we were, you know, we are a captive nation. We were brought here in captivity as a result of war. So in that sense, we are all political prisoners and we're all prisoners of war. But right now I'm directing attention to those freedom fighters, especially of the last 30, 40, and 50 years who were in U.S. prisons and jails because they were fighting for, fighting and building, working to build black liberation, and especially those who were members of the of our fighting organizations and particularly the Black Liberation Army. We have, right now, we have a situation where we're not getting any relief for those prisoners. Sundi Ada Toli, I'm told, who's in his early 70s, was just given a 10-year hit, meaning he has to wait 10 years before he goes back to the, before he goes back to the parole board. Dr. Mutulu Chakor has to wait 7 years before he can go back to the parole board. And on and on, and it's like that. You know, if I name all of the names, I'll be naming numbers similar to that.
Right.
You know, that people are waiting decades, sometimes two decades, before they can have another attempt at going to the parole board. And what we see on the other side of the world is Palestinians doing prisoner exchange, and we say, well, how are they getting their prisoners out? How are they pressuring to get their prisoners out? And what's the difference? And one of the differences is that they have going on in Palestine an active mass movement, and that active mass movement allows for armed propaganda to be carried out in the form of armed struggle. And that's the pressure. Without an active armed movement and without some real pressure making the enemies suffer, they won't be inclined toward letting on any of our prisoners go. And they won't be inclined toward it because we beg for them, because you know, we go with our hat in our hand and we say such and such a person has a heart condition or such and such a person has a kidney condition. And we go with these sob stories to the enemy who's put them in that position so that they would have kidney conditions, so that they would have heart conditions, so that they would have brain conditions. And we try to put this argument forward to them as if they cared enough about humanity to allow people in their old age to be out of prison. We just had the unfortunate incident of Marilyn Jean Buck, a North American anti-imperialist fighter who was released from prison just in July. And within a month, she expired from cancer. And they knew when they were releasing her that she would expire from cancer. But we've had many people who they didn't even respond to our pleas. Many people, like such as Bashir Hamid, who passed away in prison. And again, it's like there's a litany of names that I won't bother to take up the time on radio just to read off the many, many names. But when I name one, there's at least 10 more that would readily come to mind, to my mind, and I'm sure to other minds, you know, it would number into the hundreds. The amount of people who reach an old age where they could actually be released from prison, because it's done for people who are not political prisoners, but it's always done for people who are actually criminals, you know, who even put themselves by themselves as criminals. But this will not be done on behalf of freedom fighters, people who dedicated their lives to the liberation of our people or aiding in the struggle to liberate our people.
So it sounds like we really need to step our game up.
We definitely need to step our game up. As Imam Jamil said, we need to bring the noise.
That's right. That's right. So, Brother Bilal, what are some of the things that you feel we need to really focus on now? I know that there are many things happening with various campaigns. I know that there have been letters or, you know, even presentations that have been done through the UN and other kinds of arenas. And you and I have talked about some of the things that we want to look at doing in the very near future as well. But let's share some of that. What are some of the things that we foresee making happen and within a very immediate kind of period of time?
I think we need to, as we concentrate on political prisoners and prisoners of war, that we need to understand that they, the freedom fighters, were, for the most part, either armed combatants or they were leaders in the community. And for those who were leaders in the community, what we must do is continue their work. Because obviously their work was having an effect of building a mass movement and putting pressure on the enemy. So that's why they had to become a target of the enemy and became the political prisoners, and that's how they gained that status, because they were involved in putting pressure on the enemy. One such point I'd like to raise is that of Dr. Matulu Shakur. You know, we know that there was a release of Geronimo Chichaga, and
yes,
around that same time there was a release of Daruba Bin Wahid, and there were several other releases through the court system. And these releases are looked upon as like, oh wow, well they, some people like to say, well there is a sense of justice. But it was only when they were pressured, because Dr. Matulu Shakur and others had formulated the National Task Force for COINTELPRO Research and Litigation, who was bringing the information and engaging in litigation to get our freedom fighters out from under lockup, often to get them from being locked up in a lockdown situation, or to get them out of prison altogether. And and this is what happens when you're in a position to expose the truth and expose the lies that have been told, and expose how people are being railroaded, how people are being targeted, and how long people were being targeted, when they would rather let Daruba go than have hearings that would talk about how long he was targeted and the intensity under which he was targeted by the U.S. military and intelligence forces, or with Geronimo Chichaga when he was in prison for almost 30 years for a crime, and the issue was that the FBI had him under surveillance. They had audio tape and videotape of him under surveillance 100 miles away. Yeah, they never came out and said it, but when you build a movement that pressures them and you threaten to be able to expose it without them admitting it, then they would much rather let the person out. So we have that type of pressure that we can build these type of institutions, these type of organizations, and build a mass movement around it. It's not enough just to have the apparatus going, but if you have to have, the masses have to know about it, and the masses have to agree with the action. So at the time that you present some of the work, some of the research, you have to put forward a mass demonstration of either a physical demonstration or a demonstration through activity. What I mean by a demonstration through activity is flooding the Board of Prisons around the country, or the Federal Bureau of Prisons, flooding them with phone calls, flooding them with emails. flooding them with written letters, protesting the unjust treatment of our freedom fighters, of our political prisoners and prisoners of war. When you have those things going forth together, then you can exert an amount of pressure that the enemy may be willing to relinquish the holding of a particular political prisoner or a particular group of political prisoners. Or they may be willing to drop the trial, like in the case of the San Francisco 8. They just decided not to go forward with the trial.
Mm-hmm.
But in the case of a similar situation with Kamal Siddiqui here in Atlanta, he was charged, framed, and convicted of a 30-year-old police killing that they didn't have any witnesses to, just based on their willingness to try him and the atmosphere. That we have an atmosphere right now of conviction, you know, an atmosphere of convicting those who can clearly be identified as Black Panthers, or those who can clearly be identified as members of the Black Liberation Army, or any other identifiable fighting force that represents our people's struggle. They would, because of the climate that was built, because of the lack of support that was developed around Kamal Siddiqui, and because of the international support that was developed around the San Francisco 8, we see the case against the 8 was dropped, where Kamal Siddiqui was convicted, falsely convicted, and now he's in prison right here in Georgia.
And I think at this point it's really important to also note something, because, you know, folks need to understand and overstand some very key things, such as in the case of Mumia Abu-Jamal. And as Brother Bilal is saying, the international awareness is very key. It's very important. And, you know, the enemy knows that, obviously, which is why recently we learned of the letter that was sent out, you know, internationally, saying how various anti-death penalty groups and so forth, you know, want to suggest to no longer support Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Right.
So, you know, and cited that it would hinder some of the relationships between groups such as the FOP, of all people.
Right.
I mean,
yeah,
you know,
it would hinder the relationships between, you know, between so-called progressive groups and the so-called repressive groups. And the reality is that we don't enjoy any good relations with those repressive forces anyway. So that whole letter campaign is an attempt to stir up in people's mind and get people to refrain from struggle and engage in these positions where the progressive forces will begin to take direction from the repressive forces. When we read those statements that came out from this campaign, which you're speaking of, within the anti-death penalty movement.
You know, and this is why, again, it's so important that we continue to reiterate and to bring forward, you know, some of what has happened previously, or some things that is very relevant and pertinent to our history and to our struggle, because you have to be able to connect the dots and really see how this thing is now, how they looked at certain things from what has happened previously that they saw was effective, that they saw was powerful, and now they're making certain as best as they can to be assured that, you know, none of this can ever happen again. So we're seeing now how, and I would have, you know, I would have never thought, well, I won't say never thought, but I just would not have imagined that, you know, individuals or groups who were anti-death penalty oriented, you know, abolishing this new day age of not only slavery, but of just, you know, killing, genocide, really, I would have not thought that these people who kind of said this is what they're fighting for would stand up right in your face today clearly and say, well, yeah, this is our position, but, you know. So
right.
This thing is just, it's just so important that, you know, we make certain that the history of the RNA, that the history of those who we now call political prisoners, that we, you know, help people to understand and become more aware of the contributions that have been made through their work, of course, and also the present situation, and then, you know, help us to get prepared for what it is that we really must do now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because how you line up in a situation is very important. I never failed to point out to people that, you know, as Muslims, we are not against the death penalty, that we actually feel the death penalty should be imposed in certain cases. But what we are against is the death penalty being used by the United States and its state repressive regime that singles out and uses the death penalty in order to further carry out and execute its war against indigenous leaders. So we stand on the side of those who are against the death penalty because we are against the use of the death penalty in this country as we see it.
You know, for those who tune in regularly, I'm sure you're quite aware by now that October will mark the 13th year anniversary of the largest gathering in the world of any women ever, and that is, of course, the Million Women March. But what you may not know, because we haven't really conveyed a lot about it yet, and we are getting to do so now because we have, you know, formulated some of the pieces, and what it is that we're holding a founders convention. Now, what's going to happen, Brother Bilal, is we're also going to hold some pre-sessions that will focus on plebiscite, helping to get our people ready for the idea and the concept, and then ultimately the actual types of plebiscites that we need to look at. So what we're talking about now are things that we're going to be bringing into the plebiscite, meaning that of political prisoners, meaning that of the issue of Fontelpro, and examining our human rights, examining the injustices that have been placed upon us that have led to genocide. And so, again, these are some of the topics that we're going to look at a little closer in preparation for, you know, a plebiscite. So we just want to make sure we're able to put that information out to folk. And we're going to give you some information where you can contact us via email or telephone if you want more information about that. But one of the things that Bill Bilal mentioned, and I want to go back to that because we want to be able to bring this information forward in October, too, and that is, Bill Bilal, that you indicated that Dr. Matula Shakur and others formulated a committee of sort to examine COINTELPRO. How can we reactivate that?
We can reactivate it just by getting in touch with some of the forces. If we form an initial committee, or if an initial committee is formed in October, I will try to put in touch people who can be advisors to that work,
okay,
as well as help do the work.
Great. Okay. Very good. Because we definitely want to make sure that we're able again to put into motion as many things possible that have already been started. Again, you know, in certain realms of things, as they say, it makes no sense to try to reinvent the wheel, especially if we've seen that it
works. No, it's not necessary.
That's right. So that's what we definitely want to look at doing. So that will be something else that we can look at. And earlier, I mentioned to our family listening audience that we are, in fact, getting prepared to begin the training that Dr. Matula Shakur has rendered to several to many students and many people, but, you know, we fortunately now have access, direct access to one.
Yeah, I'm glad to see that development in the Philadelphia area. I'm glad I could play a part in that. And that's one of the other aspects of work, of being able to continue the work that a community leader or our freedom fighters have been involved in. Such, you know, and that training, that continued medical training is very important to our people's health, because people know of Dr. Mathieu Sakoa being a doctor of acupuncture, but his research into medicine is what goes beyond is what takes it beyond just him being a drug counselor and a doctor of acupuncture or a detox counselor. So he went from just using it for detoxing people from drugs to curing people of all sorts of ailments. Because it was understood that through the prolonged use of drugs, both over-the-counter drugs and drugs that you'd buy on the street, the prolonged use of these drugs is what causes the failure of the major organs. And so this failure of the major organs can be treated. You know, not only can the dependency on the drug be treated, but the damage that the drug does can be treated and overcome through acupuncture.
That's right. Wow. Okay. So this is going to be, when we spoke with Brother Dr. Kakai the other night, you know, we said how this is really going to be a powerful kind of thing that we're reinstituting and allowing people to become more familiar with and, you know, servicing our people and communities and doing it in such a way that it's not going to be overwhelmingly expensive, you know, because right about now in a lot of our communities, if you're trying to get help in a holistic, natural way, unfortunately, in most cases, it really gets to be a bit expensive. And so that's one of the things that we're focusing on is to try to provide as much, you know, reasonable kinds of services for our people. That's a major part of how we are moving forward with presenting our projects. Sounds like there's a lot going on where you are, because we're hearing a lot of what's going on in the background.
Yeah, I'm at the mosque here in the West End. The mosque of the community of Imam Jamil. I mean, being the month of Ramadan, being the time of day, is getting ready to break the fast.
That's right.
And people are breaking the fast. So that's the sounds you hear around me, the music you hear around me.
Okay.
People fixing food and people greeting each other. Some people
travel
during the month of Ramadan and haven't seen each other for a long time. So people greeting and all that's going on right as we speak. And that's a part of what we're talking about. See, when Imam Jamil was snatched away from this community, it was hoped and felt by the oppressors that the community was full. But the community, in fact, has grown. You know, the level that we are observing just in the observance of Ramadan, the level of community participation in the fast and the iftar, the breaking of the fast communally in each evening, has grown tremendously. I'd say more than tenfold than the time that when Imam Jamil was out here. So we were, just like we were talking about, continuing the work of Dr. Mathieu Sakoa, you know, we continue the work of Imam Jamil Al-Amin. And though he is not here, we keep that work going.
That's right. And I think it's very important that our people know as well, because I was just recently kind of informed of this, and that is that, you know, Imam Jamil Al-Amin is known in the community from his work, by his work, and certainly, you know, for many, many years. But specifically, what I recently learned is that there was a lot of work being done in the community that was to help remove drugs from the community and, you know, things of that nature. You know, not, you don't hear a lot about that.
Right. And see, we have to take on the responsibility of making sure people hear about it.
That's right.
Yeah. That's our job as activists, and that's our job as broadcast professionals.
Absolutely. So, Brother Bilal, before we move on into the next segment, let's hear a bit about what's going on in Belize.
Okay. What we're doing in Belize, my wife and I are involved in living in Belize, Central America right now. We're a non-Georgia nonprofit that we developed called the Southern Arts Media Education Connections Association. Has developed a project called Project DOORS. DOORS is a word, it's an acronym for D-O-O-R-S, Developing Our Own Resources for Survival. And with this project, we are engaging with the government of Belize through the Department of Agriculture to grow rice, to grow corn, to raise cattle, to raise sheep, goats, and chickens. So this came about. We had established a health center, which we had been operating here in Georgia. We moved that operation to Belize, and in operating and acquiring the land to expand the health center, we were able to get so much land that this other opportunity of being able to grow food on a mass scale has come to us. We've been blessed with that opportunity to serve our people in that way. So we are taking up the challenge and hoping that we can meet the challenge and engage other people to come with us and be involved in this food raising. We are also continuing our effort at developing the health center in which my wife teaches acupuncture. My wife, who was a student of Dr. Mutulu Shakur, by the way, teaches acupuncture. And I do music therapy. And we have one of our sons is there who is a Tai Chi master who's teaching Tai Chi Kwan. So we apply these things in at the health center as well as we teach them in the community.
Okay. Wow. So now for the healing center, you already have a building, or is there a building that you're looking on, putting up
there?
We already have a building.
We have a building that we operate, that's on our farm, that we operate out of.
Wonderful. So
we have not just a building, but we have the scenery, the scenery, and we have two creeks with fresh running water, creeks to enhance the health center.
Okay, so that means we can get ready for some retreats in the very near future.
Please
and for some training.
Please do.
Yes.
Training and disciplines we need training in, as well as relaxing.
That's right.
And then retreat.
All right. Wonderful. All right, my brother. Well, now going back for a moment to the artistic area of things, and of course you just mentioned that you are one that administers the music therapy. Before we hear some of the things that you're doing now, let's just recap for a moment. For those who do not know, Brother Bilal is, of course, formerly one of the members of the Midnight Band. For those of you who are familiar with Gil Scott-Heron, then you certainly remember the Midnight Band, and Brother Blau is definitely known for being a major element of that.
Yeah.
Brother Blau, what are some of the titles or some of the music that
okay.
You know, people
can I'm wondering, would it be possible for me to come back in about 5 minutes? We still have time.
Okay. Yep, sure can. Uh-huh.
I just
want to
take 5 minutes
meantime,
and come right back.
I'm going to play some of your music, and then we'll have you come back.
All right, I'll be right back. All right, thanks.
All right, family. What we're going to do is, as Brother Blau mentioned a little while ago, they're in the process of breaking fast for today, and so we want to give them the opportunity to do that. And in the meantime, we're going to play a little bit of Gil Scott-Heron. This is Winter in America. Gil Scott-Heron, Winter in America, and that is one of the groups that, of course, Blau Sunni Ali is very much known for. Oftentimes when you hear flute and definitely saxophone, that is often Blau playing those instruments. Blau Sunni Ali visited Philadelphia, I believe it was last week. We got a chance to sit with him. And he participated in several activities here in Philly, including the Marcus Garvey Parade, as well as went to a location, a bookstore actually, in North Philadelphia known as Black and Nobel. During that time, Blau literally went outside on the sidewalk and started playing his horn. He's known for doing that. While he was here in Philadelphia, he also went up to the John Coltrane house and played his horn in front of the house where none other than John Coltrane played, or lived rather, here in Philadelphia. And Blau went to that location. But here, when he went to Black and Noble, we were literally able to get the recording of that. So what we want to do now is share with you Bilal Sunni Ali here in Philadelphia outside of Black and Nobel.
Thank you.
Again, that was Brother Bilal Sunni Ali, and with several things going on there, one including weight in water, also a prayer for everybody. As you can tell, Brother is definitely one who not only can play the instrument, but can really bring forward the kind of feeling that needs to be conveyed, you know, through the music. You know, he mentioned about Katrina, and it seems that many have forgotten about what happened in New Orleans. Well, needless to say, our people there are still suffering, really, and still attempting to recuperate, regroup. As Brother Bilal mentioned, there's definitely a lot that needs to be said about what has gone on in New Orleans and in Mississippi. I do believe we have Brother Bilal back with us live, and so we're going to go back for some more dialogue because that, too, is another area that we did not mention yet, and we certainly need to because, again, we can never forget, and we must not ever forget. So we're going to go back to our live line, and we do have back now Brother Bilal Sunni Ali. Brother Bilal, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay,
thank you very much.
Good. You said we were able to play, I don't know if you were able to hear it, but we were able to play some of when you were outside of Black and Nobel.
Oh, yeah, I did hear it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for sharing that with the audience.
So, you know, so speaking of Katrina, or no, not of Katrina, speaking of them blowing up the levees.
Yeah. Well, we are attempting to get a lot of people who suffered in Katrina to come to Belize.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to get, you know, that it's a good place to come. New Orleans has been a refuge spot for people to come. Myself, my heritage, my line goes back amongst the Garifuna people who were fighting the British and the French on the island of St. Vincent, the island they call St. Vincent. We call it Euromaine. But so this war was taking place in the 1790s, the same time that the war was taking place in Haiti. So there's connections that's old, you know. It's not just something that we're saying we're going to connect New Orleans up with Central America as if it's not that we think we're doing something new. It's that we're refusing to let go of the old links that we've had for centuries. New Orleans became the refuge for the revolutionaries when they were put out of Haiti. When after the triumph of that revolution, we know that Haiti suffered a blockade, a trade blockade, an armed embargo against the Haiti that's lasted up until this very day, up until this very moment. They were forced to pay reparations, that people should understand. They were forced to pay reparations to France, those who lost the war, as if by defeating them, we owed them something. You know? And that's the same thing, you know, that's the same thing that Robert Mugabe, he refused to pay, you know, because in terms of giving the land back to its rightful owners, they wanted the people who were illegally holding the land to be paid money. And Robert Mugabe refused to that. Refused to do that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we say, that's the stand that has to be taken. And that's the stand that, if it had been taken in the case of Haiti, the fighting would have continued. The fighting was escalating and continued amongst us, and we would have came to a, we would have came to another conclusion many years ago, maybe actually two centuries ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we have, that's where we have to carry the fight out to now, that we can't allow these illegal forms of demanding reparations from people who have stolen, what they have. They've stolen it from us. They've stolen it from black people. They've stolen it from indigenous people. And now they want, they wish to, and when we take it back, they say we have to pay them for it.
Mm-hmm.
That's ridiculous. But
that's
unless
right.
we have, again, unless we have a mass movement, an active fighting force as part of that mass movement, we will succumb to the dictates of those repressive regimes.
Mm-hmm. You know, and in mentioning reparations, of course, there are many who here in the U.S. are opposed. And I'm talking about black folks, you know,
mm-hmm.
are opposed to the struggle, the movement in obtaining after reparations. You know, many have said, well, I'll say many, but some have said that, you know, why should we be asking them for anything or, you know, whatever. And, you know, I think that we have to, again, continue to assert the position that mm-hmm. we're talking about international kinds of things that it is very indicative to a people, period.
Mm-hmm. It's not a matter of asking for it.
Right.
It's part of our demands. It's just like, you know, we have demands that we need to make as people, regardless of their, they can be couched as reparations demands. But it's the fact that, you know, we demand certain things, and because we have demanded them consistently, we have deserved them for over the centuries. We deserve to be compensated for what
mm-hmm,
for, the,
that's right.
for the, what we have suffered, and what has been damaged amongst us.
Mm-hmm.
We deserve to be compensated, and we need to have those things repaired. We must be about the business of repairing it ourselves. But we,
right. But
if there is something that's owed us, we must demand what is owed us, so that that can be seen as part of our demands. And, you know, reparations usually come. Reparations in most instances come when hostilities have ceased. And when hostilities have ceased because it got so hot that one side or both sides said, this is too much fighting and we need to do this a better way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what will make the reparations grow. We need to increase in these demands and be busy about the business of repairing the damage without receiving any recompense from the oppressive regime. But making those demands so that whatever forces amongst the oppressive, whatever they can do, whatever they may pursue in the realm of reparations, then we need to pursue that. Whatever resources are made available, we need to pursue those and apply those to our onward move for self-determination and nation building.
Absolutely. And, you know, the other thing that I tend to say to people is it sometimes is not about what you personally think or what you think should happen based on what you think. You know, you have to look at the whole picture, and you've got to look at what would our ancestors want us to do. And with
mm-hmm.
that, you know, you then will have to have a different kind of perspective, because you have to look at, you know, again, in being holistic, we have to look at that whole thing. There are many different things that have to be done. There's many different paths. There's many different angles. There's many different remedies even. But certainly that is one that has to be put into the whole of it. You know, you cannot just dismiss it or toss it to the side. Certainly other people have not done that, and certainly we must not either. That again is one of the areas that we'll be talking about in our October convention as well, and that is the issue of not just reparations and repatriation and certainly retribution, but also, you know, the remedies that go with reparations.
Okay, could you say that again? I missed the last point you were raising.
The remedies. We're looking at remedies.
Right,
to reparation.
Yeah, that is the primary issue, that we remedy, that we correct all the things that we has allowed to go wrong or has steered to go wrong. That all of those things need to be corrected, and that's what our struggle is in a nutshell.
That's right. So, Brother Bilal, before we let you go and enjoy the breaking of the fast for tonight, you know, I know we talked briefly about the healing powers of music. And I know that's one of the areas when you talk about working with music therapy. I know that's something that, again, you know, we want to look at applying to our healing process. Because as we talk about reparations, as we talk about holistic healing with acupuncture and so forth, again, we know that these things are going to be applied to some of the maladies or illnesses that we're familiar with, but we're also talking about applying some of these things to the healing that we need as a people as a result of the ma'asa. So from a music or from an art standpoint, is there anything in particular that you're working on or that you foresee working on as it pertains to healing with the music?
Well, in the performance in the night, there's a group that I work with, the Song of Life Ensemble. In our performance, we purposely do, like that song, Wave in the Water. Songs that can bring a healing feeling and bring attention to a certain situation and bring a healing feeling around it. I'm trying to, in small settings, I get people to do what I would ask the listening audience to just take advantage of. Now, that's often people are told to take a deep breath. And what I would add to that deep breath, you know, is that when people become overwhelmed or feel you being overwhelmed by a situation, that you could have a seat and take a deep breath. And when you inhale and exhale with your mouth closed, you inhale and exhale through your nose. But you exhale, when you exhale, you allow the sound to be emitted, you know, in a hum. And let your, in about 5 minutes, allow that exhale to leave your body, but allow that hum to penetrate. The vibrations of that hum to penetrate your whole body and the atmosphere that's surrounding your body, and allow that humming to connect with the people that are around you, whether they're humming or not. So that's an aspect of music therapy that can be readily applied, and people, you know, I find there's a lot of people, they just, you say music is a healing force, and they just don't believe it. Not based on anything that they've studied or anything where they can say that doesn't work, but right off the bat, they don't believe it. So I try to suggest things, and before we take it too deep, where people don't readily understand, give it to you where everybody can understand, you know, humming. And if you hum and you allow your partner to hum and you don't touch each other, you'll begin to feel each other.
Wow.
And these are things that can, you know, these are things that you can do on your own and with a partner, with one or two partners, and you'll begin to see beneficial results. So just like when we're in a performance, we may play a song that reminds these people of New Orleans, and at the same time bring a healing feeling to that situation that took place in and around New Orleans that we know is Katrina, that tried to deliver a death blow to our nation and to our national liberation struggle. But and it's the same thing with Haiti. You know, we're playing music from Haiti with that same intent and same purpose. You may have heard somebody in the background actually went, how soon I'd be ready to leave. And that's because I'm getting ready to go to the studio to record some music. Yeah, I was fortunate enough to be in a book that's called The Sidewalk Saints, named after the Saints that won the Super Bowl, New Orleans Saints, but this is called Sidewalk Saints, Portraits of the New Orleans Street Performing Family. So I'll be finishing up a solo project of music that I do when I'm on the street in New Orleans, and some of it has many of these old traditional songs in it, like Indian songs and spiritual songs. And these ancient songs from New Orleans, which bring healing to our people.
And do you have, is there an estimated time as to when that'll be released?
Excuse me, I didn't hear the last question.
Is there an estimated time as to when it might be released?
We hope it'll be released by February. By February of this coming year, February 2011.
Wonderful. All right, my brother, I know you're getting ready to go and, you know, do some music. So we want to thank you again for, you know, taking the time to share with us tonight. And I'm definitely looking forward to seeing you in November.
Okay, and I thank you very much for having me on and allowing me to express my views.
Absolutely. All right, my brother.
All right.
See you to have a blessed evening. Free
to land.
Walaikum assalam. Hotep. Okay, family, we were just talking with Bilal Sami Ali, who, of course, is an extraordinary artist, musician, but also, as you probably can tell, one who is about liberation, has been about liberation for many years, is in fact a former political prisoner. We didn't go into earlier some of the things that, of course, he is known for historically, but when we talk about Dr. Matula Shakur and Estrada Shakur, certainly the name of Bilal Sami Ali and Fulani Sami Ali also comes up, especially during a time period where black liberation was real for some. You know, for some it was some plaything or a fad or whatever, but for others it was most definitely real. And there are many activities and events that tend to be related to exactly how real that was. The liberation of Sister Assata Shakur, of course, did happen. Folks did, in fact, go inside of the prison and get her out of that prison. And, of course, she has been in exile in Cuba ever since. And we say that because we must make certain that we continue to put our prayers and love around our sister, because we know that this government is not planning to stop their attempts in trying to obtain her again. And so, we have to be very cognizant of that and make sure that they are not able to do that to the best of our abilities on this end. And so, again, your love and prayers, we believe, truly makes a difference. Of course, as Bilal mentioned, he now is living in Belize most of the time, only comes to the United States during certain times of the year, that being Black August and also Black History Month. And I think one other time is when he's usually in the States. And so if you're interested in bringing him to your school or your city, organization, or whatever, as indicated, he, of course, is an educator, a lecturer, and certainly one to bring forward information, historical information about music, music history, and certainly now as a music therapist, is able to bring back to our communities nationwide as well. So if you are interested in booking him for February or for, again, in August of next year, please feel free to give us a call, and we'll definitely make sure we can begin that process as well. Our convention is coming up for October. Again, as indicated, we are going to hold some of the preliminary sessions for a plebiscite. For those who are not familiar with the plebiscite, you're going to hear more about that on our next show. What a plebiscite is, what our objectives are. We will talk about the issue of reparations and what that means in terms of remedies, okay, because we need to, again, use the language that is relevant to how we have to begin to approach some of these things in an international arena. So the next show will be Saturday, and that'll be at our regular time, which is at 10:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Remember, anytime you miss a show here for New Day Resurrection Liberation, you can always tune in at any time by just going to our archives. Our shows are always there available to you at your convenience. If you want more information about the Million Women Movement, if you want more information about the upcoming convention, and again, we are still accepting papers, or if you have some information that you want circulated during that time, it is scheduled to take place from October 18th through the 26th. We will be bringing forward the first 12 MWM Sister Saints, meaning starting this year we will recognize 12 women who we call our Sister Saints, and we will begin to install Sister Saints now each year. This year will mark our first time in doing it, and there will be 12. And we will begin giving you some of the names of who those Sister Saints are starting next at the next show, which is next Saturday or this coming Saturday. So, again, if you want more information about any of what I just said, please feel free to give us a call at area code 267-636-3802, or you can email us at nationalmwm@aol.com. You can also communicate with us via email at officialmwm@yahoo.com. Okay, again, we want to thank Brother Bilal Sunni Ali for joining us. We hope that all of you enjoyed the show for tonight. We certainly enjoyed bringing it to you. It was a special program for tonight. It closes out our Black August segment for 2010. And for those who are interested in, if you're in the Pennsylvania area and you want to be a part of the 2011 Black August Committee, again, feel free to contact us. Next year, we plan to do more than just a film fest. We plan to do, hopefully, a concert of sorts. So there's quite a few activities that we're looking at bringing forward, in addition to, of course, the teach-ins and other things relevant to the political prisoners. So I think that's it for tonight's program. The last thing we want to remind you is that for the MWM Founders Convention 2010, we are also planning to host a special event titled Tribute to the Mothers, Daughters, and Sisters of the Movement. And on Saturday's show, we'll give you some of who the invited guests are for that particular program. That's going to, again, take place here in Philadelphia during the time period of October 18th through the 26th. And you're going to be very surprised about what we're getting ready to convey in terms of bringing forward the MWM movement on a global level. What I can share with you right now is there is a possibility. Joining us will be Sister Karima Al-Amin, who is the wife of Iman Jamil Al-Amin, who we just spoke of earlier. Sister Karima, of course, is also a lawyer by profession, but she is also one of our sisters in the struggle. So until next week, or actually until Saturday, we're going to leave you with the thought of Ma'at Hotep and remind you that though we strive for peace, there can be no real peace until there is justice. And so we say, Ma'at Hotep. All right, we're out. Tushanana.